It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on, well, this spectacular day. I mean, I thought it was going to be beautiful. It's spectacular. Man, this is spring at its best, huh? Sunshine, blue sky, not very much wind. We're looking at about 74 this afternoon. Good stuff. You know, the primary election is just around the corner, a couple of weeks now until we'll have not only a primary but special elections in a couple of places, too. And we're doing our best here on the It's Your Turn program over the next week or so to introduce candidates for you in some key races. And that's what we will be doing today. Starting off with our first guest, who's here in the studio with me right now. That's William Wink Robinson, who is a candidate for Butler County Judge on the Butler County Court of Common Pleas. Wink Robinson, good to have you here today.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate being able to speak to the citizens of Butler County on this gorgeous day, which is perfect for door knocking.
That's true. And candidates will be doing a lot of that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to make sure that people understand what's happening, because we've got special elections, we've got primaries going on. In this race for the seat on the Butler County Court of Common Pleas, first of all, it's to fill a vacancy. Judge Marilyn Horan was elevated to the federal court, so there's a vacancy on the local bench. But candidates for judge are allowed to cross file, so you'll actually be running in both primaries.
That's right. That's right. That is based upon the principle that judges must be politically neutral, of course. And if the candidate for judge can get the sufficient number of signatures on the Republican side and also on the Democratic side, then that particular candidate's entitled to be on the Democratic ballot and the Republican ballot. If one of the candidates is fortunate enough to on May 21st to win both the Democratic side and the Republican side for this position of judge, then it's fairly likely that person would be, in fact, the next judge to be sworn in after the first of the year.
Well, let's start out, as I do in all of our candidate chats, with giving you an opportunity to introduce yourself. Many people will know you. Some people listening may not. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I am 61 years old, married 31 years to Suzanne. We have three young adult children, all in their 20s. I've been a practicing attorney in Butler for 30 years with the law firm of Henninger & Robinson. The firm goes all the way back to 1920 with Zeno Henninger on my mother's side. And, of course, my father, William Robinson, Bill Robinson, he was known by, from 1950 until his passing in 2007. Now, what's a general practitioner? A general practitioner is one that does just about every area of the law. But over the course of my 30 years, you know, you come to realize that you're good and you're confident and you can help your clients in certain areas of the law, but there's those areas of the law that you're just uncomfortable practicing, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with telling a potential client that and referring that case off. I mean, it's no different than going to your general practitioner physician and they refer you to a specialist. Mm-hmm. But I've been practicing law for 30 years, all areas of the law. Now, granted, over the course of my 30 years, I've kind of whittled it down to areas that I particularly enjoy, where I have confidence and where I know I can help clients, and that's the area of family law primarily. I do estate planning. I do estate administration. My secretary's typing a deed right now, so I do real estate work, various things.
Why did you decide to run for judge on the Butler County Court of Common Pleas?
Well, after practicing 30 years and after practicing in the courtroom in front of 11 different judges over the course of those 30 years, I feel that I can help the citizens of Butler County the best by applying what I have learned. This is not an election about individuals. And since December 20th until today and probably for the next 2 weeks, I have to talk about myself, but I really don't like talking about myself. I think I have the qualities that a good judge requires. Sure, integrity, sure, honesty, sure, fairness, all those canned phrases that you'll hear judges say. I pride myself on respecting other people. I pride myself on being patient with all different kinds of people. Some clients, you know, you don't see eye to eye on, but you just have to remain patient. They're highly emotional. Respect, I believe I have good respect, excellent respect in the legal community. And outside of the legal community, I believe that I have very good respect from others that have come in touch with me over the years.
It's quite possible, likely some think, that the next judge will be a family law judge. It's not a foregone conclusion. You're okay in this particular area?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've been practicing family law. It was my first phone call, first day of work, and they don't teach you how to answer the phone in law school, believe you me. But I've been doing family law consistently for 30 years. That's an area that I feel that where my patience and where my respect for other people really comes in handy. And it's good to, you know, it's not a pleasant area of the law. It's highly, highly, highly emotional as compared to the other areas of the law. And I think I have the ability to recognize those emotions, accept those emotions, and kind of cut through those emotions to get to the heart of the matter a little bit quicker than most.
Just so in case some of our listeners aren't familiar with what we mean when we say family law, we're talking about divorce cases. Child custody, I suppose, would be the most emotional.
Sure. Clearly, child custody is the most emotional. And every child custody case is unique. Why? Every mother's unique, every father's unique, and that child is unique. So there's no book you can pull out of your drawer and say, well, this is how it should go. The bottom line is, what's in the best interest of the child? And yes, child custody is extremely emotional. One of I think, my strong qualities is the ability to, let's avoid the courtroom. Let's try to work this out. It's terribly, terribly expensive to take a custody matter all the way through to a judge in the Court of Common Pleas. So I pride myself as an attorney on that ability to try to work out a fair arrangement. And sure, those arrangements aren't set in stone. They can be changed, and you have to accept that too. People change. Children grow up. They change. So, yeah, family or custody is one of the more difficult areas.
And by the way, that never goes to a jury, right? That's a decision for the judge.
That's correct. There are preliminary procedures. And like I tell clients, clients expect, and they don't know, that let's file this custody complaint. When is my day in court before the judge? There's a procedure in most counties, if not all, called custody conciliation, which is where a lot of custody agreements are reached, which is great news. Mm-hmm. But if you end up going to trial, you possibly could be looking at a non-jury trial. You could be looking at upwards of a year, because there have to be psychological evaluations. Those cost money. Those take time. So, you know, it's better to settle in any matter involving the law.
Do the attorneys for the two parties decide that? I mean, does a judge ever get involved early on and say or suggest that settlement might be appropriate, or do you not even see it as a judge until it would actually come before you?
No, that's a very good question. After the psychological evaluations or custody evaluations are in, there's another attempt, there should be another attempt, by the lawyers and the parties to take a look at that very, very confidential psychological evaluation and try to work out an agreement there. There are no winners or losers. If the agreement cannot be reached, then the matter would go to what we call a judicial conciliation, a meeting with the judge in chambers, where there is that very, very frank discussion between the judge and the attorneys. And, of course, the client's mom and dad are sitting out in the hallway outside the courtroom. And custody cases do settle at that point, too. So you really don't get to the judge unless you can't reach that final agreement at the judicial conciliation. And even cases can even settle on the morning of a custody trial. It is extremely, extremely emotional when you get to a custody trial.
I think another point of perhaps contention many times in family law would be a child support issues. Would the judge make the final decision on that as well?
Again, there's a procedure involved where you do not go straight to a judge. The Butler County Domestic Relations Section conducts a support conference, and it real quickly it evaluates and looks at each parent's income. The state sets what are called the state support guidelines. It's relatively new, complicated formula now, but you look at that formula again. If there can be an agreement reached at that point in time when you walk out of the domestic relations section, great. That can always be modified, of course, as people's incomes change. If there is no agreement, the conference officer would issue a recommendation to the judge. The judge reviews that recommendation and signs it. If still one of the parents is not happy with the amount of support being ordered, then he or she may take it to what we call a de novo hearing. And that is, in fact, before a judge. But even before you get to walk into the courtroom on that morning, there's one more attempt to try to resolve the matter with a senior domestic relations conference officer. So folks don't realize that in custody and support, and even in divorce where you're splitting up the money, equitable distribution of assets, alimony, you don't go straight to the judge at all.
It's possible, as we mentioned a few moments ago, that the person who's elected to the Court of Common Pleas, a new judge, will not serve in family court. He might be in criminal court. You don't know. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Sometimes when people see a sentence that's been handed down by a judge in a criminal case, they scratch their heads. They're not sure. There are guidelines for that, though, right, that come from Harrisburg?
Yes, that's another very, very good question that most folks understandably don't understand. Excuse me. Unlike television, unlike the movies, you don't have a judge willy-nilly up there saying, you know what, here's the crime, you were found guilty, I don't like how this happened, I don't like the color of your shoes, so here's what you're going to get. It is not like that at all. Judges are restricted, believe it or not, in the type of sentence and the length of sentence that he or she may impose on a criminal, called the Pennsylvania Support Guidelines. Now, those guidelines are developed by the Sentencing Commission, which is comprised of judges, attorneys, district attorneys, public defenders, private citizens, psychologists, and they meet and they meet and they meet and constantly revising these guidelines. Once there's approval from the commission, then the matter goes to the state legislature, and it may get shot down. It may have to go back. So it's a work in progress, but at this level, at the common pleas level, judges are restricted by what the guidelines say. Now, many factors go into what part of the book you look at for these guidelines. Prior criminal convictions, aggravating circumstances, was there a gun involved? Was there an elderly person involved? Was mm-hmm. there a minor involved? Mitigating circumstances that could lessen the sentence. Did the individual fully cooperate with authorities to make the final prosecution of all those involved a little bit easier and less costly?
You mentioned TV. For the vast majority of folks, that's what they know about the court system. You know, it's what they see on TV. But a judge sometimes can help people if it does come before him or her to be a little bit more comfortable in the courtroom, help them along a little bit.
Well, the vast majority of citizens never show up in a courthouse, have no reason to. Mm-hmm. Frankly, have no reason to see a lawyer, perhaps, unless it's a real estate deed or a will or a power of attorney. So, yes, judges serve dual, many, many roles. You know, you can be firm. You can be fair. There's a word in the law that I really like. It's called equitable, and equitable means fair. In any case, perhaps not as much in the criminal arena, but in any case, a judge has the ability to apply what we've known and call equitable powers. If something just isn't right, a judge has the ability to try to make it right, based upon what's reasonable.
There are four candidates who are running for a judge on the Court of Common Pleas in the upcoming election on May 21st. I always wrap up our candidate chats, Wink Robinson, by giving the candidate an opportunity to kind of summarize, maybe review for folks who weren't with us when we started our conversation a few minutes ago. And just, you know, take a couple of minutes to say why you think people ought to consider voting for you on May 21st for judge on the Court of Common Pleas.
And that's a loaded question because I am known to keep talking and talking, and so hold up the card that says stop. I think what I'm most proudest about in my campaign, officially starting December 20th, I do not have an agenda. I am not being pressured to do this by any certain group. I don't have an agenda to change the courthouse. Frankly, whoever is elected to this position is going to be the proverbial low judge on the totem pole. He or she is not going to be able to go in there and start working with a jackhammer to break things up. On the contrary, that whoever is elected the new judge, and of course I would like it to be me, should listen. Listen to the experienced judges. What have they done? Follow their lead for a little bit. Now, that doesn't mean I would sit there and clam up. If I'm asked my opinion, I would certainly give it. But you have to show these current sitting judges the respect. You just can't go in there and try to blow things up. I'm also very proud in my campaign that I've maintained this pledge to be ethical, honest, fair. I'm not criticizing any of the other candidates. I have endured the poisonous darts that have been thrown my way and will continue to do so through the election. I've maintained that my wife and I are self-funding this campaign. We're not accepting cash contributions, even though it's perfectly permitted. We're not accepting in-kind contributions. I've also maintained my law practice. I am still working. Now, over the next 2 weeks, with weather like this, I will not be working, but I'll be working the streets and the doors in Butler neighborhoods and throughout Butler County. But one more thing I'd like to add, this is a credit to the citizens of Butler County. Those doors that I've knocked on, I am so pleasantly amazed and pleased at how friendly people are when you knock on their door. If you're not an outgoing person and you knock on a door, ring a doorbell, and you're greeted and they show genuine interest, the folks ask if you want some water, and I say, do I need one? A bottle of water? But Butler County citizens really, really are friendly folks. So I've enjoyed, plus it's good exercise.
He is William Wink Robinson. Will your name appear as a wink on the ballot?
Yes, it will. William Wink Robinson. You said it exactly right. I am third on the Republican side on the ballot, and I am second on the Democratic side. I know it's confusing for people in this day and age of diversionary politics, but judges are politically neutral. Dave, thank you for the time.
Thank you. Thanks for being with us here today. We'll move on. We'll take a break. We're going to be chatting for a few minutes with one of the candidates for school director in the Butler Area School District coming up. And please stick with us because our final guest today, our final candidate chat, will be with Sam Doctor, who's a candidate for state representative in the 11th District. Back with more of the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Walmart's grocery pickup and delivery is a definite winner. And if you haven't tried it, here's how it works. Either download the Walmart grocery app or go to grocery.walmart.com. Place your order and select an exact time for pickup or a one-hour window for delivery. Satisfaction guaranteed because the folks in the store are trained to pick the best items, just like if you were picking for yourself. If you're not satisfied, you get your money back. Use the code WOWFRESH for $10 off on $50 or more. It's a great service. Walmart grocery pickup and delivery. It's quick, easy, and convenient.
What's in store for your business this week at Staples?
A token and toner of our appreciation.
May is Customer Appreciation Month at Staples.
All month, you can earn 15% back in rewards when you purchase $75 of ink or $200 of toner.
That's no small token.
Just our way of saying thanks.
You're welcome.
Not to you.
Oh, right.
15% back in rewards on ink and toner. Now at Staples, where there's a whole lot in store.
Valid 5519 to 6119. Visit staples.com/15inrewards for details.
Welcome back, good friends. It's the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. We've got candidate chats today, as we will periodically over the next couple of weeks leading up to Election Day on May 21st. We're pleased to be able to chat with one of the candidates running for school director for school board in the Butler Area School District, and that's Eva Robinson. Eva, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here today.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
There are seven candidates, I believe. How many seats are up for election this year?
There are five.
So there's candidates for five seats, huh?
Right.
And can you tell us or tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I came to this country in 1957, moved to Butler in 1961, and graduated with the great class of 1968 from Butler High School. I've lived in Butler all these years. I have three children. And a stepson, and six grandchildren, and a step-granddaughter.
Where did you emigrate from?
Denmark.
Oh. Why did you decide to run for school director in the Butler Area School District?
Well, I've thought about it for a long time. This was finally, it came at a right time, and somebody asked me if I wouldn't consider doing that, and I thought about it, and I said, yes, I would. I'm interested to see where my tax dollars go. There's been a great deal of change in the school district in the last 4 years. I'm pleased to see a lot of that, and I'm interested in continuing it. There's some things that I would like to see happen. So, but until I'm there, I don't know. I don't know finances in the district, so I can't really comment on what changes are until I see what is happening now and where everything is.
Do you have any key issues that you would like to examine and you think might possibly need changed?
I would like to see if financially feasible, I'd like to see the middle school stay. The middle school has only been in existence for a few years, but it is rated now, after only a few years, one of the top middle schools in Pennsylvania. And I don't think we can afford, for the kids' sake, to disrupt that momentum that's going on in that school.
This is fourth grade up through...
It's fifth and sixth.
Oh, it's fifth and sixth, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
no. But formerly these students were still in their respective elementary schools.
Yes.
Now they all attend what used to be the junior high school in town.
Actually, a long time ago, it was the senior high school originally.
Correct. Yes, yes. Do you favor keeping them in that building or...
Yes.
Or
yeah, if okay. at all possible, keeping them in the building, but definitely keeping them together. And I don't know, from what I understand, the MT Elementary School, I think Broad Street, is not big enough for both classes. So that means splitting them up again. And I'd hate to see them do that. I think what has happened down there at that middle school with the teachers that have combined, I think it's a good idea. I think it's great.
What do you think the district should do with Broad Street? Keep it as an emergency location or increase attempts to sell it or what?
I think it should be sold. I think it's absolutely foolish to keep it as a just-in-case school that's needed. It's too expensive at upkeep. And that's the same thing as I see it. Again, I haven't seen the financials. As I see that if they close the middle school, they can't just leave it. They're going to have to maintain it. And somebody, I've heard rumors that, and these were just strictly rumors from somebody, that Slippery Rock was interested in it. Well, until they have money on the table, it doesn't belong to them.
Hmm.
And so.
What do you think about property taxes? I don't know anybody who thinks they're too low. Can anything be done about that? Or is it... I've had many people call this program and say, it's just automatic. They go up every year, it seems.
I don't think schools should be funded by property taxes anywhere. I think that does a great disservice to people who live in low-income areas. I think the schools are not getting the funds possibly that they need. And I think in areas where the property taxes, because that's how it's funded here in Pennsylvania, where they live, where homes are worth a lot of money and they pay a lot of taxes, you get more equipped schools. Now, that doesn't always equate to better schools, but it seems to, because you get a better quality teacher. I really disagree with that, but you have maybe more computers and things like that. So I don't think it should be funded at all by property taxes. Mm-hmm. We have to remember, I don't like to pay taxes any more than anybody else, but we can't have in this, and it's not only goes with school taxes, it goes with everything. You can't have what you want, good roads, everything else, without paying for it. It's not going to come out of the sky. And the same thing with schools. And if we don't maintain the schools, this country, it's already fallen in relation to many other countries that are coming up the line. We need to teach these kids. They need to learn the computers, and they need to learn all these things. You can't do that without money.
What do you think about school security these days? Butler area is one of the first schools, if not the first, in Pennsylvania to have armed security guards in every building. They're all retired state troopers. Any thoughts on school security these days?
I think it is the saddest thing that we had to go that way, but apparently we have to go that way. We have to go. I don't like arming teachers. You put a gun in a desk, and teachers can't get to that gun fast enough, and you carry it on them. It's just as dangerous as some child will get a hold of it, overpower the teacher. So I don't think arming teachers is a good idea at all. I don't think it makes good practical sense. But they have detectors going into schools, and they have armed guards sitting there. And I don't know what else really what you can do. They're doing a great deal with bullying in the schools today. I think that'll help somewhat. And identifying, people are becoming more aware. So when they see hints of a student who may be troubled, and it's not only students, it could be former students, but when there's hints, there seems to be more awareness, and people are alerted, the authorities are alerted quicker. I don't think there's a choice for it. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I remember going to Butler High School, and we had no problems, in and out of the school, nothing. And it's sad. It's so sad.
Are you satisfied with the curriculum offerings in the Butler School District?
To be quite honest with you, I don't know what they are. They seem to be okay. Yeah.
What about a dress code? You think schools should have a dress code these days?
I think they should. I've always thought that. I think when there is less emphasis on name brand clothing and who's wearing what, I don't think you're going to have the, and I don't know how much discipline problems there are in the schools, but that definitely gets rid of it. I would like to see it. I remember, and I'll throw out something, I remember going to the Butler Community College, the second year it opened, and Dr. Lamont Crape was up there, and some of us girls at that time wore pants instead of skirts, and we were admonished for wearing pants instead of skirts.
I knew Dr. Crape.
Yeah, so then you know what I'm talking about, and I don't think we need to go back that far, but I think we do need a dress code. We need, and he also with skirts had to be fingertip length. Hmm. I mean,
are you cross-filed? School directors are able to run in both primaries.
I am cross-filed. Yes.
So you'll be listed on whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, they'll see your name on the ballot. I always wrap up our chats, and I know this is very quick, but we want to try to give all candidates a chance to at least introduce themselves. But I always finish by giving candidates a chance to take a little bit of time and just tell the listeners why you think they ought to consider voting for you for Butler Area School Director.
I have no agenda. I'm going in there. I have no children in the school district anymore. I do have a daughter that's a teacher, but she's tenured, so it doesn't matter what I do. I'm going in there to make sure that, or to see how my tax dollars are being spent. But my greatest incentive is I want these kids to have a fabulous education, and I want to make sure that they are getting that. Butler High School has always, when I was in school, had a great, great education. The kids that came out of my class are all doing extremely well. And I want to see that for every child. I want every child to have that opportunity. And if it's going to college, that's great. If it's going to vocational school, that's almost even better today, because we need the, and that's also, I want to see the vocational school so that when a child graduates from the VOTEC, they can actually go get a good paying job. And we know that we're getting a good person who's done that, be it automotive mechanic or whatever.
She is Eva Robinson, a candidate for school director in the Butler Area School District. Very nice to meet you today. Thanks
nice
for stopping
to meet
in
you
to
too.
Chat with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Okay, we take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be chatting with Sam Doctor, who's a candidate for state representative in the 11th District in a special election coming up on May 21st. We will be back in just a moment or so.
Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler can answer your questions about cremation. Is it appropriate for your loved ones? Should there be a funeral service? Keep in mind that even with cremation, it is time to celebrate how meaningful and important was the life of your loved one. Is cremation appropriate for your family? How would they feel about it? And what's the cost? Cremation has three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. The Thompson Miller Cremation Program is right here in Butler at our newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. So let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller in Butler. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight-up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, and it's our final candidate chat for today, and we say hello to Sam Doctor, who is a Democratic candidate for state representative in the 11th District. This is the vacant seat that was formerly held by the now resigned Brian Ellis. Sam Doctor, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here today.
Hey, good to meet you too, Dave. Somebody told me, and this person, I trust what they say, that since they've been keeping records, that you haven't missed an election, that you haven't missed a vote. Is that true?
That is correct, yes.
Good for you. That's awesome. If only everybody had the same kind of dedication to participating in the democratic process, I think we'd be in a better position than we are today, you know.
I think it's fun to vote.
I think
sure
so, too.
some of the poll workers in the precincts where I've lived, they probably hate to see me coming in because I start talking to
you again.
You know,
yeah.
It's a good time. Just kidding. Let's talk a little bit about, first of all, this is a special election in mm-hmm. your particular race. So it's not a primary, even though it's on primary election day.
That's right. So independents can vote. You know, if you're a Republican, you can vote for our ticket. If you're a Democrat, you can choose mm-hmm. to vote Republican. It's unique in that way. And it's also unique in the fact that it's more of a sprint than a traditional election with a longer cycle would be. So, you know, we're not necessarily doing anything differently than we would be if we had, you know, the full amount of time to go out and talk to people. But it just makes it that much more imperative that that me as a candidate, that I'm going out and giving every spare moment that I have towards just speaking with people about what their perspective is and, you know, what they need from their representatives.
And the winner in this special election will immediately go to Harrisburg and serve out the remainder of the term of Brian Ellis.
Right? Yeah, that's right. So you've got to be prepared for not just to do a sprint to get into office, but you've got to be prepared to pick up right where he's supposed to have left off. You know, and we're in the middle of the cycle. We're gearing up for passing a budget. I don't know if we're going to end up in the same situation that we've traditionally been in the state the last few years, where negotiations go on and on and on, and the budget ends up 3-4 months late, maybe. But you definitely need somebody who's prepared to go in with the knowledge of what's going on in the state, and also with a plan to you know, build a coalition with of a bipartisan nature to make sure that we get these things done. Because the things that affect our day-to-day lives, they rely on functioning state government, right? Everything goes better when the state is doing what it's supposed to do. So,
A lot of folks who are not in Harrisburg kind of shake their heads at the lengthy, drawn-out budget process. I mean, you certainly want to take your time, but it seems like it always comes down to the last minute and usually late,
yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I think that there's... So the sort of partisan sectarianism, or whatever you want to call it, is definitely part of the reason why you don't have quicker movement on these kinds of things. But it's also indicative of just how serious our elected officials are about you know, the budget as it relates to the health of the Commonwealth. Right? These things are important, and the people that we send there should hopefully realize that. And if it does take months and months to get a budget done, I hope that's always indicative of the fact that people are being serious about the process. They want to do things right, not just quick.
So. I think there ought to be more transparency in the budget process instead of, you know, a lot of people right now don't find out what's in there until the
sure.
day that it's passed, and sometimes that's midnight on June 30th.
Well, I mean, it depends on what you mean by transparency. I think that everybody should have access to their legislator, right? Everybody should be able to... if not sit down and talk to them, at least, you know, write a letter and have someone, a human being, actually respond, not a form letter or something like that. But also, I don't know, if you're a regular person that wants to know more about legislation, you can go to the Commonwealth's Department of State webpage and, you know, download, like, a draft of a piece of legislation, say, like, SB 76, right? You would search that on Google, find it, and print it out, and then you end up with 6 to 10 pages of very difficult to parse legal language, right? Because that's what legislation is. So I'd like to see an effort be made at the state level to have each piece of legislation accompanied by a memorandum of understanding that lays everything out in regular language for people who are not as well versed as some of us are in how state government, you know, writes everything down in the legislation itself. So
we're talking to Sam Doctor. He's the Democratic candidate for state representative in the special election for State House in the 11th District. Now, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, about who you are. Some folks will know you, many will not.
Yeah, I'm a third generation steel worker. My wife is a union nurse at Butler Hospital. I'm a father. We have a 2.5-year-old girl who has some special needs. She was born with a high Apgar score, but she has autism. She had some trouble after she was born. She had a sort of a brain hemorrhage, and so she has a shunt that takes cerebrospinal fluid and moves it away from her brain to keep it a normal size. But she's the happiest little baby in the world. I say that because I want people to who do have children with special needs or young adults or people who are adults that rely on state programs to help them flourish, thrive, and grow. You know, that my wife and I are with you on that. And it's a priority for us to make sure that the state is efficiently and cost-effectively continuing services to those people and improving in any way that they can. But I'm a regular working person, above all. And I think that's what our community needs. We need somebody who understands the perspective of regular people that can sit down and have a conversation with anyone and actually listen to them and internalize what they're saying so that they can take that forward and, you know, use this position as a megaphone to Harrisburg and not the other way around. So,
this special election is for a representative in the state house in the 11th district, which is generally the central part of Butler County, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the district kind of looks like a Tetris piece, right? It reaches, if you imagine where the township is, it's kind of in the center of the county. It reaches out to the east and the west, and then on the east side, it also reaches out north and south. And so we have seven representatives, in as far as I know, in Butler County. One thing that I've been doing is like listening to old recordings that of the show, It's Your Turn, and just seeing how the conversations go and everything. And I came across a piece from, I think it was like two Februarys ago, that Brian Ellis came to talk to you about the maps, the electoral maps that had changed at that time. And so, I mean, I'd love to talk about why our district looks so funny, what the state is doing about, you know, changing the way that we redistrict, where we should go from there.
Well, this brings up something that I was going to ask you about, the gerrymandering issue.
Yeah, so like a lot of people don't, gerrymandering isn't really self-explanatory. Basically, the idea is that every 10 years, the U.S. Government does a census. And based on the results of that census, our state may lose or gain one or two congressional seats. And so every time that happens, we have to redraw all the maps for elections in Pennsylvania with respect to U.S. Congress people. Basically, the idea of gerrymandering is that your elected officials are in charge of the redistricting process, right? And they can, based on data that they have available to them, choose who their voters are. And I think that it's clear to everyone that the way the process should go is that voters should choose who their representatives are and not the other way around. The reason that we have such strongholds of just partisan radicalism in this state is because the legislature has created seats that are never going to be competitive. Never. And so they elect people who basically tell their constituents that they're going into Congress not to represent a bipartisan way forward for Pennsylvania, but to represent a very specific vision of what Pennsylvania is supposed to be. And because there is no competition, they're only held accountable to the people who actually vote for them. When elections are competitive, you end up with representation that is, in my opinion, better. You need a representative who is willing to listen to people on both sides of the aisle, who understands that it's their job to represent everyone, not just the people who vote for them, not just the people who agree with them, and who's willing to, you know, always listen to those people, take in their perspective, hear what they're saying, No matter what, our representatives don't know everything, and they should be willing to continually pursue a better understanding of what the truth actually is. You can't do that without hearing new ideas.
Some states have countered the gerrymandering problem by taking the redrawing of the district lines after a census out of the hands of state lawmakers and putting it in the hands of an independent board. Would you favor such a change here in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely, I would. Yeah, I think that's a great way forward. it takes there. So first of all, I do want to say that some people don't realize just how scientific and evidence-based our map drawing process can be, right? And a lot of the headway that's been made on figuring out how to tell if a map is drawn with the interests of only one party in mind. All that progress has been made very, very recently. As early as 2012, 2016, we've had major breakthroughs with looking at these maps and finding an empirical way to say, okay, no matter who you are or how you look at this, here's the data, here's why we think it's partisan. And I think that's why Pennsylvania's map got thrown out as unconstitutional, and it's why the new map is in many ways superior to the old, because you can look at it from a scientific point of view, not from a Democratic or a Republican point of view, and say, this is a fairer map. This is a map that will produce fairer results and more competitive elections, which, I'm a big believer in. A citizens' commission is one of the better ways to do that, because your representatives will always have a very dear stake in what the map is going to be, right? If you give your rep the power to choose who their voters are, that's a power that they are going to not necessarily have the wherewithal to avoid using in a way that benefits themselves. And in the case of the Republican Party, I don't want to point fingers, because depending on which state you're looking at, each party is absolutely guilty of this. But The Republican Party, when they made their arguments to the Supreme Court, one of the arguments that they made was that it is impossible for legislators to draw maps without considering how the new map will impact the success or failure of individual legislators in the body. So it's impossible to draw it without taking partisanship into account if you're a legislator. That was an argument that they made. And it's an argument that I think really, really lays it out as to why we need an independent citizens commission. There are many different ways to get there, but I think that it's a road that we should be willing to travel down. And as Americans, we should understand that it's incumbent on us to continually improve our electoral process, to continually reestablish and strengthen the social contract that is supposed to exist between regular people and the folks who represent them in government. I said this during the debate, and I believe it. The social contract is like a marriage, and if you don't work on it, if you don't work on a marriage, it'll fail, and if you don't work on the social contract, it'll fail. And I think that it's evident that we're going in the wrong direction in that regard.
We're talking with Sam Doctor, Democratic candidate for state representative in the 11th District in a special election coming up on May 21st. And all of a sudden, that's like 2 weeks away.
Yeah, it's a sprint.
2 weeks like from tomorrow. We'll take a break. We'll chat more with Sam Doctor here on It's Your Turn in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Schnoor's Greenhouse. Oh, boy. It's that time of the year, isn't it? Schnoor's Greenhouse is family-owned and operated since 1889. That's not 1989, that's 1889. That's right. They're celebrating 130 years in business. Wow, 130 years. Very friendly service, very knowledgeable staff at Schnoor's Greenhouse. They're located, by the way, off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club. It's Butler's longtime trusted greenhouse, Schnoor's. They specialize in annuals, beautiful flowers. Kind of can think of, they're going to have it there. Hanging baskets, gorgeous. Nice Mother's Day gift, by the way. Vegetable plants, too. They've got them. They've got them at Schnoor's. They even have gift cards available. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., Saturdays, 8 to 5, and Sundays, 11 to 5. That's Schnoor's Greenhouse. Off Herman Road, look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club. Family owned and operated since 1889. It's the place to grow. Schnoor's Greenhouse. We're chatting with Sam Doctor. He is a Democratic candidate for state representative in the special election for the 11th District coming up on Election Day, which is 2 weeks from tomorrow. One of the issues that you have mentioned in your campaign, Sam Doctor, is your concerns over per diem abuse. Per diem is a Latin term. It means by day, day mm-hmm. by day. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So in addition to the salary that a legislator receives in Pennsylvania, they also receive cash money in the form of per diems. A lot of the time this is tax-free because of a loophole that gets exploited. But my concern is what the per diems are actually used for. I think that in principle, it's a really good idea, right? This money is supposed to pay for lodging. It's supposed to pay for food. It's supposed to pay for travel for your legislator. It's supposed to facilitate them getting to Harrisburg, staying there no matter how long it takes to get the job done, and being on the job, right? I think that's all good, right? And I think that it's, in many cases, a good investment for Pennsylvanians to make. They want their representation to be effective, even if they live, you know, 150 miles outside of the state capital. However, there are some serious problems with the current system. There's very little accountability. Legislators don't have to provide receipts to get any of this money. They don't have to prove that they've spent it on things that they actually need. That needs to change, in my opinion. I don't want to talk too much about the former Congressman Brian Ellis or the former Representative Brian Ellis, but when we ran against him last year, because this was a big part of our platform, we had to be prepared for it to come up when we went to the doors. And you know, Brian was regularly near the top when it comes to the state legislators who asked for the most money in form of per diems. So we filed a right to know request to get 10 years of records from Brian for all the per diem requests that he made and any receipts that might accompany those records. Not a single receipt accompanied those records. And there was more than $100,000 in that time period. I don't think that is unique to him. I think that I would wager that if you picked, you know, a name out of a hat full of names of state legislators and you did the exact same right to know request, that 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get any receipts accompanying these requests for per diems. That is unconscionable to me. Our representatives should know that they are accountable to the people that elect them. They work for us, and not the other way around. And we ought to know whether or not our legislator is taking this money that they get tax free and taking it, you know, to the corner bar and spending the whole afternoon there, or if they are, you know, buying a house in Harrisburg and paying the rent, or I'm sorry, paying the mortgage of that house off, and then continuing to collect these per diem this per diem money, even though they don't actually need it. So if you own a house in Harrisburg and your mortgage is paid off and you need, and you request money, the full amount, it's about $200 a day now, because you claim that you need to pay for your lodging while you stay in Harrisburg, what are you actually doing with that money when your mortgage is paid off and when you don't have... At a certain point, the taxes on the property will also be paid, right? And the money goes into your pocket. That is commonplace in our Commonwealth. And corruption like this, because I think that's what it is, I think anybody would recognize this kind of activity as corruption, is accepted as part of, you know, the cost of doing business. That needs to change. That culture needs to be rooted out wherever it exists, no matter which side of the aisle it's on. And our leadership in Harrisburg needs to acknowledge that. And they need to work as hard as they can at changing that culture, making people more accountable to the folks at home. Because, like I said, the social contract is not doing well. People need to be able to trust their government, and this is one of the steps that we need to take to move forward on that.
Another one of your campaign issues is defending workers' rights and the right to collectively bargain. Do you think that might be in danger here in Pennsylvania?
I think it's absolutely in danger everywhere in the United States. There was a bill just introduced a few weeks ago that would make right to work the law of the land, and not just in the Commonwealth, but in the entire United States. And that means that unions would be fundamentally weakened. It's basically pulling the rug out from under your collective bargaining unit when it comes to paying for the services that you provide for your members. And the biggest thing that unions do for their members is they provide legal services. Okay, so If you work for a company that does not follow your contract regularly, you end up with situations in which you are owed money that you are contractually obligated, that they are contractually obligated to give you, right? And if you didn't have a union, your only recourse, even if it was only $100 that you were owed, would be to go and hire an attorney to go after that money. And if anybody thinks that, you know, you've got a good shot at getting $100 and coming out in the black by hiring an attorney and taking a $1 billion corporation to court, then I've got a great piece of waterfront property to sell you in Arizona. So a lot of folks just don't understand that unions are still so incredibly important, and they benefit everyone, not just their membership, but you get a safer work environment, you get better working conditions, you get better wages for everyone, not just union workers, because we set the bar for the rest of the industry. And that's something that absolutely needs to continue. It provides people a modicum of democracy in their workplace, and that is a really important thing that you can't really depend on outside of a union shop.
Our time begins to run short. One more question before I give you a chance to summarize. It took Pennsylvania lawmakers a long time to legalize medicinal marijuana. Many other states are now either have or are looking at legalizing marijuana for recreational use. Would you be in favor of that or not?
Absolutely, I'm in favor of it. I think that, don't get me wrong, I think there's a right way and a wrong way to move forward. But I think that, so a few years ago when Ted Nesbitt, his office called my house when I lived on North Monroe Street, somehow we got a phone call that put us on a telephone town hall with Ted Nesbitt, even though he wasn't my representative at the time. But I thought, hey, I got nothing to do. I was hanging out waiting to go to work for midnight shift, and so I said, okay, I'll ask a question. And I asked him, we have this budget shortfall in Pennsylvania. At the time, it was a lot worse than it is now. Why aren't we looking into legalizing and taxing marijuana? And he told me that, in his opinion, it was inevitable that would happen, that there was a lot of support from people that he worked with for this idea, but that the bills were not going to be able to make it out of committee, right? I think that it's unconscionable that 55 people every single day in this Commonwealth go to jail for carrying a small amount of marijuana, and that our legislators are not just in favor of this, but think that it's inevitable that we're going to make this change and that we're not making any progress on this. We have empirical evidence that this drug is not dangerous, it's not a gateway to harder substances, and that there is an economic opportunity unlike any other that could be created by a single piece of legislation in this Commonwealth. When we legalize marijuana, you're talking about not just revenue for the state, but good jobs and good small businesses for people here in Pennsylvania.
I always wrap up our candidate chats by giving candidates a chance to summarize. Take a minute and tell our listeners why you think they should consider voting for you in that special election for State House in the 11th District, Sam Doctor.
So this is something I'm going to continue to do even if I get elected, until I have to be in Harrisburg. We're going to continue knocking on doors. I go out every single day. We've knocked on thousands and thousands of doors in this district, asking people to share their perspective with us. I don't care if you disagree with me about my whole entire platform. Your opinion is important to me because it's my job to represent you. At the end of the day, your legislator is just an extension of the will of his constituency. And if he doesn't recognize that he works for the people in his town, then he's doing a great disservice, not just to the people that elected him, but to our entire democratic process and the ideals that the framers of our Constitution set up to make this country great. I am a regular working person, it's true. I don't have experience in politics, it's true. I think that is a point in my favor, and a strong one, because I understand the frustration that regular people have with the political system, and I know what to do to fix it. I want people to have trust in their representation, and so I'm going to continue being the kind of candidate that I would be proud to vote for, someone who is absolutely willing to sit down with anyone, listen to them, and not just get into an argument about, and tell you how it's going to be. That's not going to happen with me. So.
Sam Doctor, he's a Democratic candidate for the State House in the 11th District in a special election that will be coming up on May 21st. Sam Doctor, nice to meet you. Thanks for stopping by to chat today.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
That wraps up our Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Enjoy the sunshine and the spectacular spring weather, and I hope to have you with us tomorrow at 12:30 for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Sway me now. When she looks a rhythm star.